From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Duncan in for Beth Ryak. Washington is bracing for Michael Cohen's testimony in Congress this Wednesday before the House Oversight Committee. President Trump's self-described fixer is expected to answer questions about debts and payments relating to efforts to influence the 2016 election. Chairman Elijah Cummings released an outline of topics, including whether the Trump campaign complied with tax and campaign finance laws and more. NPR is planning to offer full-day coverage of the hearings on Wednesday, which you will hear in place of Insight. Today, we have political junkie Ken Rudin joining Insight with a preview of what we can expect. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Beth.
So are you expecting fireworks this week at the hearings or something a little more mild?
Well, no, I think I am expecting fireworks. Well, look, I don't know what to expect, but the fact is that there's it's drama. Just the thought of a former insider, a former member of the Trump family, Michael Cohen, who's been his fixer, as you pointed out, for the past 10 years. And the fact it's almost like Brutus and Caesar, the fact that he may betray one of his own, or at least, you know, turn on one of his own. That alone sounds very Soprano-ish. And plus the fact that while you do have a very mild-mannered Democratic Chairman Elijah Cummings, you do have some firebrand Republicans on the committee led by Jim Jordan, the congressman from Ohio, who's a founding member of the House Freedom Caucus. So you know that the plan is already going to be to denounce Cohen as a liar and a fraud and a traitor. And we'll just see how, I mean, Cohen may be the most relaxed guy in the whole hearing room on Wednesday.
So later in the week, Cohen is expected to answer questions behind closed doors. So why the closed door sessions?
Well, both Tuesday before the Senate Intelligence Committee and Thursday before the House Intelligence Committee, those will be behind closed doors because that will be that's what he'll be asked. And we expect him to answer about the Russia investigation. And I guess the agreement is that that should not be public, that both Senate and House Intelligence Committees, remember the Senate is controlled by the Republicans, the House by the Democrats, both parties agree that this is the kind of stuff that should not be in public, especially while Robert Mueller is in, perhaps in the last 2 weeks of his investigation. So Russia stuff goes behind private doors. The stuff about perhaps hush payments to Stormy Daniels or business practices or, you know, working with Russia regarding, opening up a hotel in Moscow. That's the kind of stuff I think that you'll see on Wednesday's open hearings.
So are you expecting Republicans on the committee to play defense for the president, or are they going to kind of lay low, try to stay out of the spotlight, so to speak?
Oh, no, I don't think they'll play defense. I think they're going to be on the offense, just like those who defended Judge Kavanaugh basically attacked the witnesses there. I think Jim Jordan and Paul Gosar and Mark Meadows of North Carolina, the Republicans on the House Oversight Committee, will be on the offense of being attacking Michael Cohen, said, well, look, you're an admitted liar. You're going to prison for lying. So why should we believe you? So I don't think they're going to be in a defensive mood at all. And could it be a food fight? Could it be an Animal House food fight? It could. And we'll just see what happens.
And so some chest beating?
Well, I think so. I mean, basically, look, this is not like the House Watergate Committee in 74 when there were defenders of Richard Nixon, but there were also a lot of Republicans who said with sorrow that it looks like Nixon was involved in this whole Watergate conspiracy. There's nobody I could think of on the committee, certainly not in the top five. I mean, these are all fire-breathing conservatives, all members of the House Freedom Caucus, very pro-Trump. Matter of fact, they probably feel that Trump is not conservative enough. So rather than either defending the president, I kind of feel that they're going to go on the offense and just be attacking Michael Cohen.
California Congressman Adam Schiff was on ABC's This Week with George Stephanopoulos. Schiff is the chair of the House Intelligence Committee, which will meet with Cohen behind closed doors on Thursday. So we have some tape of Congressman Schiff explaining that he wants Cohen to talk about Trump's finances. Let's listen.
What we have learned to date about Moscow Trump Tower is chilling, and that is, as Donald Trump was campaigning for president, even when he became the presumptive nominee of the Republican Party and was telling the country he had no business dealings with Russia, he was privately, through his organization, seeking the Kremlin's help to make what may have been the most lucrative deal of his life, even reportedly offering an inducement to Putin to make it happen. And at the same time, talking about removing sanctions on Russia, something very important to the Russians. That is deeply compromising. Whether it's criminal or not, it is deeply compromising of our national security.
So, Ken, how do you expect Democrats like Congressman Schiff will balance oversight, but also respecting those boundaries for Special Counsel Robert Mueller?
Well, that's a great question. First of all, Congressman Schiff mentioned a very important thing, that it may not be illegal, but it's certainly troubling in the fact that the president was throughout the entire campaign not only trying to get business in Moscow, but perhaps waiving the removal of sanctions against Russia as perhaps a reason to do his financial to enhance his financial position. And that is, you know, again, does that prove that Russia interfered in the 2016 election? No, but it does show that the president may not have been telling the truth about his involvement with Russia. Now, as far as Mueller goes, while there have been some hints last week that this may be the final week, that doesn't look like to be the case at all. But given the fact that many attorneys have left the Mueller investigation, the fact that Rod Rosenstein is going to leave probably in early March, mid-March from the Justice Department, the sense is that we may be 2 weeks away from the end of Mueller, or at least, should I say, Mueller giving his report to the Attorney General. And so while that may be the end of the Mueller investigation, a lot of people think that what Mueller will have in his report may not be saying that, you know, send Trump to jail, impeach Donald Trump, but it may have enough roadmaps and clues to allow Schiff to almost continue the investigation. So in other words, if Mueller does end it in the next couple of weeks, it could be up to the Democrats on the House Intelligence Committee, led by Schiff, to continue the investigation, pick it up where Mueller leaves off.
Well, we have some more tape. Let's listen to Congressman Schiff. He is explaining here what his options might be if the newly minted Attorney General William Barr refuses to make the Mueller report public. Let's listen.
Well, we will obviously subpoena the report. We will bring Bob Mueller in to testify before Congress. We will take it to court if necessary. And in the end, I think the department understands they're going to have to make this public. I think Barr will ultimately understand that as well. Barr comes into this job with two strikes against him. He applied for the job by demonstrating a bias against the Mueller investigation. Indeed, that's part of the reason he was hired. He's also not been willing to commit to following the advice of ethics lawyers. Indeed, that was part of the reason he was hired. If he were to try to withhold, to try to bury any part of this report, that will be his legacy, and it will be a tarnished legacy. So I think there'll be immense pressure not only on the department, but on the Attorney General to be forthcoming.
Are you talking about public pressure? Are you prepared to take the administration to court?
Absolutely. We are going to get to the bottom of this. We are going to share this information with the public. And if the president is serious about all of his claims of exoneration, then he should welcome the publication of this report.
So what do you think, Ken?
Well, you know, it sounds like the Schiff is jumping the gun a little bit on what Barr is doing. We don't know what Barr is doing. Adam Schiff is exactly right that Barr has given indications in the past that basically he feels that, you know, the fact that Trump fired James Comey, the FBI director, does not mean obstruction of justice. Barr has in the past given presidents, not necessarily Trump, but given presidents more leeway when it comes to executive power. But Barr knows that everybody's going to be waiting to see what he does once he gets the report from Robert Mueller. And the Democrats are fearful that Barr may just decide to give a little summary and hide a lot of the stuff that may be more incriminating to the president. We'll see what Barr decides to do. I was surprised that Schiff was as specific as he was, saying that, well, if Barr does this, we're ready to go to war with him. I think he could have saved that for a little bit, see what Barr does. But clearly Schiff and the Democrats are ready for a fight. They know that if they don't get a full understanding of what's in that report and it's not made public, they will fight with subpoenas.
So the New York Times published a lengthy feature about the Trump team's dual legal and public relations strategy in dealing with investigations. And there were some previously unreported anecdotes, like President Trump exploring the possibility of appointing someone he trusts to oversee the Michael Cohen case in the Southern District of New York. So what's your takeaway, Ken, from this, you know, deep dive into Trump's inner circle?
Well, I hope a lot of people read it. I mean, this is very detailed. And basically what it says is, and the bottom line is this, that Trump has said from the beginning, this is a witch hunt, this is fake news, this is not real, this is a vendetta by the FBI and the Justice Department, and it's all not real. But at the same time, the Times report goes into detail of what Donald Trump and his allies have done to either obfuscate, suppress the investigation, go around the investigation, belittle the investigation, and the things he's done with his members of his administration to basically to ignore the findings or try to mute the findings and certainly not cooperate with the findings. So for all the talk about fake news and witch hunts and fake news and all that stuff, there are 26 indictments coming out, already out. There are six or seven already guilty pleas. This is real. Trump knows it's real. And he knows that with the Cohen hearings, with the Manafort investigation going on, and the Mueller report, the president has a lot to be concerned about. And he's doing everything he can to just damage it in advance of it being released.
So let's switch gears, Ken, to the latest developments with Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort. On Friday, special counsel Robert Mueller's team filed an 800-page sentencing memo detailing Manafort's criminal conduct. So did you enjoy all 800 pages, Ken?
I'm waiting for the movie to come out. And I think it's going to be with Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga. I think it's going to be in that one.
With a
but
song.
But you know
huh?
something? I mean, I did read the summary, and the summary basically says what we've been told, that basically Manafort, even though he had a deal with the Justice Department, he pleaded guilty, he said he would agree, and he just lied. He lied to the prosecutors after he already came out with this dealing. So you know, for all I've read, Manafort could go to prison for the rest of his life. All the things he's done wrong, obstruction of justice and money laundering, and you know, he had these hidden overseas bank accounts. He's accused of so many things, but somehow when you lie to prosecutors after you've already worked out a somewhat lenient deal, that I think is crossing a line, even though he's already crossed so many lines, and he could be in big, big trouble. One more reason why the president of the United States could be very, very worried about this. Now, the president has talked about perhaps offering pardon, things like that. But there are other investigations that Manafort is under, including stuff from New York and Long Island and things like that, that may not allow Trump to pardon him. So it's one reason for both Manafort and Trump to be very, very worried.
I'm talking with political junkie Ken Rudin about the Cohen testimony expected this week in Washington, D.C. There was also some speculation that Mueller would issue his report this week. There was quite a buildup to that. Is that looking less likely?
Yeah, I mean, as I said earlier, I think, you know, I mean, look, we even had the acting attorney general Whitaker saying about a month ago, well, he's ending the investigation now. Mueller has been very tight-lipped. But as I said, the fact that the attorneys are leaving, that Rosenstein is leaving, I don't have any inside information other than what I've read. And what I've read seems to be that we may be within a week or two of the report being sent over to the attorney general, although from all indications, it will not be this week.
So switching gears a bit again, Ken, the Washington Post editorial page gave California's U.S. Senator Kamala Harris the top spot in its top 15 list of Democratic candidates for the 2020 presidential race. Here we go. It's very early, but how would you score the senator's first few weeks of campaigning against her competition?
Well, yes, it's very, very early. I mean, we're not even in the first inning yet. The debates don't come until June. I think a better indication of where the candidates stand will be easier to ascertained once we see the debates, in the first debates in June and July. But having said that, aside from Bernie Sanders, you know, Kamala Harris has raised more money than any other candidate. There was a great article, I think it was in today's or yesterday's New York Times, I can't remember if it was yesterday or today, saying that basically that she has been the star power in Iowa, that she's drawing big crowds when she goes in Iowa, and all the other candidates. Look, there's so many candidates. There's, you know, Julian Castro, and there's Mayor Pete from South Bend, and you know, anyway, there's a bunch of, look, there's like anywhere between 12 and 15, depending on what you want to count as most serious. We don't know what the full field is yet. We don't know about Joe Biden. We don't know about Beto O'Rourke. We don't know about Michael Bloomberg. Apparently, you have to have a name that begins in B to decide if you're running or not. But anyway, Sherrod Brown of Ohio. We don't know what the full cast of characters are yet. But right now, again, the use of the word front runner, which I've seen many people use, are just, you know, absolutely ridiculous. But the fact is that Kamala Harris is turning heads. She is drawing huge crowds. She is raising money. And I guess, you know, in the first month of her candidacy, you can't ask for better things than that.
All right, we have a new development in the final race of 2018 that has not been decided. North Carolina's Elections Board decided to order a new election in the 9th Congressional District. Republican candidate Mark Harris was busted for alleged fraud. Ken, what's your take on that situation?
Well, it was a very dramatic moment. We talk about the drama we're going to see with Michael Cohen this week. It was very dramatic last week when Mark Harris, he's the Republican who had a 900-vote lead in that North Carolina 9th District race back in November, but they refused to seat him because of allegations of election fraud from misuse of absentee ballots. All along, Mark Harris said the guy who organized this effort, this absentee ballot effort, the guy who's accused of, or at least suspected of wrongdoing, he said, I had no connection with it. I had no idea this was happening. And then on Wednesday of last week, his son, Mark Harris's son, got on the stand and said, Dad, I told you in 2017 that this guy is no good. I warned you about this. It was a very dramatic moment. And one day later, Mark Harris broke down and said, you know something, we do, there were illegal activities taken. We do need a special election. So it's interesting, all the Republicans who always talk about, you know, tainted elections and illegal votes. Well, it looks like the Republicans were accused of it or guilty of it in North Carolina's 9th District. And there will be a new election sometime this year because of those tainted votes.
Well, that's an interesting point to leave this conversation, Ken. We appreciate you being here. That is political junkie Ken Rudin. Thanks for being on Insight, Ken.
Thanks, Beth. Next show, I'll learn how to pronounce obfuscate. Okay, I'll let you know how I pronounce it next week.
Okay, we'll be expecting an improvement on that.
Thank you.